I think that once we get this system going, it's going to really change the way freelancers and independent workers and small businesses are able to evaluate risk and are able to quickly tap into that debt collection infrastructure, the attorneys and the debt collectors of the world that everybody else, every other creditor has. And that's what we need. And once you get that going, your non-payment issue is just going to become the same, you know, the same risk that anyone else has, as opposed to the freelancers now have a huge non-payment risk. You know, it'll just be the same as any other creditor, and that would be awesome.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Business of Freelancing podcast, where we help you get better clients, make more money, and live a happier and a healthier life freelancing. I'm your host, Brendan Dunn, and today I've got a great interview with a guy who knows a lot about collections and legal things and all these other things that are honestly the things that we would prefer not to ever need to deal with, but realistically are things that we should know about or at least know how to handle. I sat down with Jesse Strauss, and Jesse and I just talked a lot about kind of that transition from employment to running your own business and all the fun things that happen happen with that transition. Things like small claims courts and debt collection and all that other stuff, again, that you probably don't want to ever deal with. But this is the episode that will equip you with what you need to know for when and if, and hopefully it's a big if, that ever happens to you. So without any further delay, here is Jesse. Hey guys, I want to introduce you to Jesse Strauss. Jesse, I don't think we've had a lawyer on the show yet, so I'm really excited about this interview because we're going to talk about some things that are things that most of us, I think, hope we never need to run into. Specifically, what happens when you don't get paid, how you can ensure you do get paid, and so on. So Jesse, I just want to first off welcome you to the Business of Freelancing. And we'll talk more of it in a second about kind of what you're doing for freelancers. But quick 30-second kind of intro. What do you do? Where do you live? And what got you to what you're doing today with freelancers?
Great. Well, thank you, Brendan. And I'm happy to be on the show. I'm also happy that you're excited to talk to a lawyer.
Well, I'm not paying you right now, so I don't care.
You don't get that terribly often. Okay. Yes. Yeah, so I'm a lawyer in New York. I have my own small firm, pretty much as close to freelancing as a lawyer as you can get. I have gotten into the business of doing debt collection for freelancers and independent workers, finding a new solution to the problem. So I do that both through my law firm, but where what we're trying to do is become a forwarder of these claims to lawyers around the country, because as a lawyer in New York, I can really only handle claims in New York. Freelancers work for clients around the country and come in really from around the world at this point. And we're looking for ways to get their claims, get their invoices collected using lawyers in other jurisdictions as well. So that's what Indie Payment is. Otherwise, you know, the hourly practice I have are things that are probably not terribly relevant, but very interesting and has given me a real insight into how to get these debts collected. And that's dealing with ownership disputes among owners of small corporations generally. So that those are my two practice areas. And as a third, I also do wage and hour. So if an employee comes to me that hasn't been paid under the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act or under some state corollaries, we're able to group them together generally into a class and obtain relief. So the business of collecting debts for freelancers came about really because I was getting a lot of folks who were independent contractors coming in, not protected by these laws, trying to find some legal solutions to get them paid.
Got it. So kind of a rite of passage, I think, for most of us when we finally incorporate and we have a proper business is to get a contract. So, you know I went to I asked around a few business owner friends and found a lawyer, hired him to write me a contract. And there's always that stipulation about, you know, should there be any issues, we will, in my case, do, you know, I forgot the wording, but it was something like in the Commonwealth of Virginia will be where, you know, the court thing is. Again, I don't know any of the language. I just know at the end of the day,
it's called the venue selection clause.
Sure. Right.
And that's, so there's two principles. There's venue selection and choice of law. You want both of them to align, ideally. So if you are a freelancer doing work in the Commonwealth of Virginia, you want to have an agreement with your client that any dispute is going to be resolved in Virginia.
In your home turf. Yeah. Right.
And the reason for that is simple. I mean, you don't want to have to hire a lawyer across the country.
Right. You have your own local lawyer who can.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. And your local, you know, the courts, it's convenient for you to get to. And that those choice of law provisions, sorry, those venue selection provisions are honored by the courts most of the time. So it's, you know, it's a great thing to have. That is a benefit to having a contract. So where you can still collect a debt without a contract, and we'll go over that, there are certain things you can put in a contract that make it easier to collect the debt. One of those is what's called, you know, venue selection and a choice of law clause.
Right. So I ended up paying, which is probably, I probably got ripped off, but whatever, it worked, more than $10,000 for this agreement plus statement of work templates and everything else that I would end up using. Quick note, these are all now included in Double Your Freelancing Rate if you want to skip ahead and not need to get something done from scratch. But I would still, as I always mention, recommend going to an actual lawyer like Jesse and getting it modified and fitting for your local your local laws and everything else. Anyway, so I created this contract. I used it hundreds of times with no issues. Usually the clients would just sign it. When we got bigger clients, they had in-house legal teams who probably wanted to, just justify their job. And they would spend a lot of time back and forth redlining a lot of it. But I never had to use it until we had one client. And I've mentioned this client on the show before who... Everything was going well. They were booking about half of our team, which was about 5-6 people, and spending a lot of money on us. And this happened for a few months. And we had net 30 payment terms. So at any given time, we could have potentially 2 invoices out because we would invoice every 2 weeks. So we had 2 invoices out. The first invoice had went past net 30. So I called up the client just to say, you know, I figured they just got lost in their inbox. Forgot about it, whatever. And he tells me, oh, by the way, Brendan, yeah, I meant to mention this to you. We ran out of money, so we can't pay this now. But the good news is I'm talking to some investors. And for me, as somebody who's like tallies up and notices, okay, so, you know, they owe about $110,000. I know what it's like to court investors. And I know what it's like, especially if here's a business that has been spending a lot of money, doesn't have much to show for it. Yeah, I'm probably not going to see this money anytime soon. That's the first time I actually had to call up my local attorney who created the contract and say, what do I do? So I'd love to just quickly tell you what he told me and what I ended up doing. And then I'd love to then use that as a good segue into everything else we're going to discuss. So he told me really the best that we can do. He looked at the contract, looked at everything I had said. There was no personal guarantee of any sort. It was just an agreement between my company and his company. He said, really, the best thing we can probably do is write a letter to their bank asking for the funds. Outside of that, I mean, you can't go out. Because part of the excuse that the client had told me was, hey, Brendan, look, I'm putting my whole house and my whole life on the line for this business. And that was kind of his justification. My response was a little curt. I said, well, that's great, but you have everything to gain and everything to lose. I'm just the services firm, you know, in this instance. But anyway, I never collected, and it still really, it stressed me out a lot because that was...
In my legal practice, and it's embarrassing to say because I'm a lawyer and I sue all the time, you know, I've gotten stiffed not $110,000, but a lesser amount of money. And, you know, it's a real decision about how to go about collecting that, especially when you have a defendant on the other side that is claiming basically insolvency. They're saying, we're out of money. And it's very nice that your guy said, well, I'm looking for investors, and if one comes in, we'll pay you. You know, that's not really worth all that much. With respect to your lawyer's advice to write the bank a letter and say, give us the money, I would have to look at your contract to see if that would fly. I mean, some contracts, and I've never seen this in a service contract, general service contract, but hey, it could be in your contract. If so, you've got a great contract. It basically says that all these debts are collateralized by the receivables of the company, in which case your lawyer would have filed what's called a UCC statement, and then the bank would honor that. And
we
say,
did
okay,
have that, but they had no receivables. They were still in early development stage.
Okay, right? Yeah. So that's a cool contract that you've got. I mean, that's definitely worth the $11,000 you paid, because that's not something that's generally in these contracts, but that's great. So now there are no receivables, so the letter to the bank is going in the circular file, I guess. one approach, you know, you could have taken, which is a more aggressive approach, and I've done this before, but you have to be willing to spend the money on it, is to not just write a letter, but rather go into the court. And you make an emergency motion, and you say, essentially, I have been told that they do not intend to honor this contract. If the court does not act now and give me possession of X, Y, and Z, when I sue them in a couple months to get my money, they've already told me there'll be no money there. So that's one way to do it. That might put some pressure on them to find a way to pay you something. The idea that they have no receivables is usually, they might have no receivables in the bank, but it's very possible they do have bills out there. If you were to prevail on the court to give you that preliminary relief, what you would be able to do is write to everybody who might owe them money and say, do not pay, put that money in escrow. We have a dispute here. That money belongs to us. So, you know, that's one approach. Those things cost money. I mean, you could, you know, when you're trying to collect $110,000, you could end up spending, you know, $20,000 or so on legal fees to get this done. People do that. You know, when you add a zero, it makes sense. If you're, you know, $1,000,001, it makes a lot of sense to spend $20,000 to do that. On a $100,000 fee, you have to sort of ask whether it's...
And that's that discussion I had with my attorney, is the risk-reward kind of ratio, right?
Let me just add one thing here. In a contract, another benefit that you can do is you can put fee-shifting provisions in there, which says that if there is a dispute about this, I am able, you will pay my lawyer's fees. And that's a fairly common provision in most contracts. It's, you know, it's risky at times. If there is a dispute and you lose, you do have to pay their fees in theory. But generally, there's not going to be a dispute over the quality of your work because that's something you can correct. The dispute is more likely going to arise over there. They're not paying you.
Right. And that was never, I had email testimony saying that everything was great and the product we were giving them was perfect. It's just they kind of let us on, and we unfortunately were doing work really on credit by saying, yeah, we'll work for you and not get paid for up to 30 days.
And right. No, yeah. Sure. And that's, you know, that's an interesting thing about freelancing and being a small business. We are, and I, you know, I'm a small business and a freelancer in some ways. We are the only credit granting entities in this country that do not have access to debt collection infrastructure. So anybody else out there who's granting credit, you know, credit card company, obviously, hospitals, you know, the guy who mows your lawn, whatever it might be, I went to the money guy, he's probably a small business, but if it's a larger company, once there is an issue with payment, there is a huge debt collection infrastructure out there that they can tap into, and it's fairly easy to do so. There is no service out there for freelancers which is making that debt collection infrastructure available to them. And that's a big problem. So when you have a group that is not able to easily collect its debt, they're just sort of crying out to be the people who are paid last or not paid at all.
Right. And you hear these stories about, oh, well, then they go and they replace their homepage and go into the server and replace it with like this company is a cheat and doesn't pay their bills. And it's, you see this stuff and I'm cringing on the inside. Like when I see that.
So that's a symptom of not having access to sort of an organized way to resolve these disputes. People resort to self-help. You know, at the base of it, the civil litigation system, which is the dispute resolution mechanism that the public funds, is all about preventing everyone from going out with a baseball bat when they're owed money. You know, so we need to find a way to get these debts into the dispute resolution system, and that's what I'm really interested in, and that's a challenge.
Well, let's talk about preventative. You know, instead of talking about how to fix diseases, let's talk about how we can prevent some of this from happening, if you don't mind. What do you think most freelancers do wrong in terms of how they either structure their agreements or structure how they get paid that set them up to be liable to something like this happening?
Sure. Well, I think that one of them we talked about a minute ago, and that's the personal guarantee issue. You should definitely get a personal guarantee at any time that you have a contract. The other thing that you need is to have in your contract fee shifting in the event of a non-payment dispute. I think that that's a very important provision too. Another thing you should do, like we talked about, is a venue selection and choice of law provision in your contract. So all of those things are sort of deterrents, and they make it easier for you to collect. Now, one thing to keep in mind is that a contract itself doesn't get you paid. So it's the ability to get that, to move that contract through the legal system that will get you paid. And the fact that those provisions are in there, and the fact that the client knows that you could use, you know, the court system to get paid, will probably be a deterrent to them not paying you, right? They'll stiff the next guy who hasn't been savvy, unfortunately,
or who has no contract whatsoever.
Or has no contract rights. Right. Well, that's the number one thing, and I think that at this point it's pretty much ingrained into every freelancer that if you are working without contracts, you're taking your earnings, for granted. I mean, you're taking your life into your hands, because if you're operating without a contract, not only do you not have the ability to resolve the dispute in a simpler way, right? You can still get the dispute resolved, but it's a lot easier with a contract. But you're also not setting expectations either. And that's sort of an important thing too. You're more likely to run into dispute in a non-contract case, not because there's not a contract necessarily, but because people entered it not knowing the expectations from the other side. Something as simple as a net 30 payout, there's no contract, you don't know that that's when you're supposed to be paid. So you can send your invoice, and then they can sit on the invoice for months and months and months, and you can say, I thought you're supposed to pay it net 30. They say, why was I supposed to pay it net 30? There's no agreement there. We have an investor coming in a couple of weeks, and you'll get paid by that. And that's the problem. If you have a contract, you could have prevented all of that. So that's where the contract does become important.
One of the things that I ended up doing as a result of this was, first off, I switched to being paid upfront for everything. So what that meant practically was either people would buy hours if we're billing hourly, which we did for a time, kind of upfront, and then we would then switch to more of a weekly model where, you pay a weekly fee for development, I guess, right? And then the benefit of that was the long short of it was, if we don't get paid for the week that is starting now, we don't work that week. We'd rather have people on the bench than work off credit.
That's exactly right. I mean, sometimes that's called a retainer. So you take a retainer, you put the time aside, and you already billed them for the time. Generally, then they can draw down against the retainer. So that's a great billing arrangement. If you can get paid up front all your money, that's great. A lot of clients obviously don't want to do that because there might be a trust issue with you. You have the money. Will you actually do the work? You could arrange milestone payments, and that's a very good mechanism to deal with that. You can also, escrow the money. The company that I've started called Indie Payments, we actually do have an escrowing option where folks can put their money into a third party. We work with basically an online escrow company, and then they can tell us what their agreement is, and assuming that both sides agree that the money can be released, we release it. If we don't get an answer, we release it. If there is a dispute, then we can tap into a dispute resolution mechanism, which we're still designing. But that's sort of an approach. And there are other companies. There's a company called Freelancer.com that actually just bought Escrow.com. So there is a lot of movement in that space to design easy ways to do milestone and escrow payments. So that should be an exciting, that'll be an exciting development, and one that'll hopefully sort of an option to allow freelancers not to get into payment issues to begin with. But, that's down the road. I mean, and then there's always the problem that you're engaged in a project, you're really into it, and you don't necessarily want to stop, right, if the money's not there, and you've been working with this client, and you assume that they're, credit worthy, and they're honest, and that they'll pay even if there's no money there. You'll bill them for it, and the real problem is when those checks don't arrive. So that's a difficult problem to deal with. But certainly an ounce of prevention is worth a lot of effort to try to recover.
Absolutely, and I see a lot of people who they'll go and you're so excited when you sign that new contract, when the contract's signed and they say, yes, I want to work with you. And you start to think, I think we all get a little naive at that point, right? The problem with consulting is you have a few clients paying you a lot of money. versus other business models that have a lot of people paying you right. a little bit of money.
Right. So when one client doesn't pay, it really affects
exactly.
you
right.
in a different way. So one of the things to also keep in mind, and this is, as the freelance economy grows in this country, people are going to be providing these services, and they're important services, and they don't exist at the moment. And my company, Indie Payments, is trying to establish them. And one of the things is sort of credit scoring for clients. So, the bank doesn't put its money on the line on very lenient terms unless you are a fantastic credit risk, right? So you're somebody who pays all his debts on time every time. And then, a bank, if you are not that type of person, either won't extend you credit or they will do so with a more onerous interest rate. And they have very, very sophisticated banks, and almost every other credit grantor has a very sophisticated way of determining whether or not they should give you credit, and if so, on what terms.
Oh, absolutely. And I think we're all we all basically give all of our clients a perfect credit score.
Right, exactly. And that's a problem. And one of the reasons is the lack of information about right. the creditworthiness of clients. There are folks who use a lot of freelancers, right? And what comes to mind are magazines and publishers. And they use a ton of freelancers. And there's very few resources out there to figure out whether they're credit worthy. And not only whether they're credit worthy, but because entities change, whether the people behind them are credit worthy, whether they're people you want to deal with. And so developing that repository of information on the web in a way that doesn't have everyone, it doesn't look like sort of a Yelp type thing where people are just yelling at each other about stuff. Developing an actual credit score that means something for freelancers and independent workers is a really awesome project. Indie Payments is working on it. It's complicated by a couple factors, but we're gonna try to do that, and that way folks will be able to say, I will work with this client, but I'm gonna get all my money up front, something like that. And that's I think that would be big. You get a call from a client, the next place you go is to check their credit score. Are these people I should be working with, or on what terms?
Yeah, and I'd love to hear logistically how you can do that. Because, you think of these different services, whether it be a typical bank loan or one of these newer kind of like cabbage type services that will, you click a few buttons, it talks to your merchant accounts and it figures out how much you're bringing in. And it doesn't have the full picture, but it can see cash flow. And that's definitely something that should be for us, the determinant of if they have a bad credit score, then you say, you're paying us up front versus maybe. And that's the thing. Like I live here in a part of the country where it's very militarized, and we've had a few government contracts. And the way the government works is you're lucky to get anything less than maybe net 6 months. Right. So
the government's a fantastic credit risk.
Yes.
They don't not pay.
And you can walk to the bank with the contract and say, lend me money now.
Yes.
Based
exactly.
off this yeah. as collateral. Right. Which you can't do that, though. You can't bring your contract for some mom and pop insurance company down the street to a bank and say, lend based off this. You typically can't do that.
A bank won't do it. I mean, there are the factors of the world out there that will do it. And there's there's a lot of activity in the online factoring space. The warning there is that they don't go after the client when they don't pay. They go after you. So in other words, they still withdraw the money from your account, whether the client has paid you or not.
Right. And you're still getting money. I mean, based off that assuming perfect credit score. And then if, considering what they take, the factoring companies take, stacked with the risk. Yeah,
I mean, it's just so there are those. So yes, you can walk into a bank with a government contract, but not the mom and pop contract. The factors will do it, but there's a lot of drawbacks to that. Logistically, what needs to happen, there needs to be a central repository in a sense where freelancers go and register their invoices, and they sort of pre-register them, and they say, listen, I have these invoices out to the following clients, right? Then they can track it, and they can say when they're paid and when they're not. And if they're not paid, we would, connect them at that point, and this is something that Indie Payments is working on. We connect them at that point to either first party ARM, so first party account receivable management are the people who call on your behalf. And they say, and usually it's the freelancer themselves, that there are very good services out there that will make those calls to try to get money out, and they charge differently. Some of them charge buy the call. Others take a percentage of what they can collect. If they're charging by the call, they're probably the folks that are the friendliest. If they're taking a percentage, they're probably being a little more aggressive. That's first party ARM. Then, you know, you move, and if you still have a client, you know, Indie Payment is who won't pay. Indie Payment has access to a network of attorneys and debt collectors around the country that will take this debt and collect it on contingency. But the other thing that's happening during this process is that because there's a central place where everyone's sort of registered their unpaid invoices, we can tell who's paying and who's not and when they're paying and when they're not. So, not listed by the freelancer, but rather by the client. So that would be a huge innovation. And I think slowly but surely we're moving in that direction. The issue has to be, is there enough interest in it? Would people use the service to make it worthwhile? An Indie Payments model is that we're free until we collect. So if you do need collection services, we do take a management fee and in some cases a percentage of what's collected. But we have to see if freelancers have to use these services, right? They have to actually, you know, want to have their invoices sort of on this in the system. And that's a logistical challenge to try to get people to use it. A lot of freelancers, as you're probably aware, as I'm aware, sort of iconoclasts and, you know, are doing a freelance thing because they actually don't want to be involved in these bigger systems. They could be, but they don't want to. So that's difficult. Yeah.
So, it sounds like your model, though, is going to be more historical. So like this client consistently pays their bills on time, so they're good. But is there anything out there that you know of that, I can't help but think of these more like one-click services like the Cabbages that will, behind the scenes, do some sort of credit or risk analysis on you and then lend you something based off of that. Is there anything that you know of that? I think it would be awkward in that instance pointing a new client who I just signed to this third party saying, go here, have them hook up to your bank account, and then I'll tell you how we're gonna, you know.
Right. No, that what you're talking about doesn't exist.
Right. And but I understand why it doesn't exist.
Right. Right. And it's, you know, there are services where you can use a Harvest of the World or FreshBooks of the World, and I'm sure, but they would have a system where they could automatically take the money out of the client's account, but no client ever agrees to that. I mean, that's sort of absurd to even ask, to say the minute I put the invoice, spit the invoice out, the money comes out of your account. So that's not what we're designing either. I think historical is really all we can do on something like this. And historical pricing, right, or historical comparatives, I guess, is what you'd say. You know, in other words, this person has always pays net 30, therefore they will most likely pay you net 30 as well. That's basically how our credit economy functions. So a freelancer can go on to Dun & Bradstreet or Experian for Business or a couple of the three major credit agencies and can run a credit check of a client and see what they're up to. That's expensive though. And it's not, I have never met a freelancer that does that. You know, probably more freelancers than I do. I've never heard of that.
I don't know anyone who does that.
Okay, yeah. So that's an option for anybody. But I think that within our community, we can actually make it work for free. We can have a free resource as long as people are willing to go on there and sort of register their invoices. That's where we want to go. The other cool thing that can happen now is more and more freelancers are using the QuickBooks and different accounting software, and that's all in the cloud. We can get into their API, for lack of a better word, and we can pretty easily pull the data if people let us. So we would know when your invoice goes out, almost seamlessly, and then we would sort of know when your invoice is late, and we would be able to work with you from there. So that's a cool thing in the future. And then making all that information about who's on the other side of that invoice, who the client is, making them, making that information, putting it out into the world so somebody can search and say, well, this client has, four or five invoices, right, that are over 30 days due. I don't know what freelancer issued the invoice. That's not important. But what I do know is that this person is having payment problems, right? And if they've called me and they're asking me to do work for them, I'm going to get money up front. I'm not going to do this on credit, no matter how excited about the project I might be. That would be cool. That's the world we're moving to.
I love that because that's a very data-driven approach to determining how risky is this new client of mine. But I think a lot of it can be intuition also. I mean, I've worked with, for instance, one of my clients was a factoring company who was very much like boilerplate room operation sounding, right? So they, to me, seemed high risk. They actually weren't, but they at first they were. And the way that I've just kind of tried to institute across the board, telling people, look, my job is to go and create great results, great value for my clients. And if I also need to wear my hat, my debt collecting hat, then that limits my ability to do amazing stuff for you. So one of the reasons I require and mandate payment upfront, which is fully refundable. Like if you fire me midweek, I'll refund you the difference. But you know, I do upfront payment because in the event that I have a billing issue with a client, well, there could be, you know, resulting stress from that. There could be a lot of other factors that will keep me from being able to just focus on you and your needs.
Right. Yeah. No, and I completely agree. And but not only that, but the invoice you're not getting paid from another client is going to affect your work for somebody else because you're going to be stressed out about it. So that's unfair.
Yeah, I was never trying to say you're not going to pay me, but the other client is not going to pay me and it's going to affect you.
Right, right. And you also, you know, you need to know where the best use of your time is. You can't be working for clients that are not going to pay. You know, and all that is incredibly important. And there's a huge pain point, you know, for freelancers. So let's say we don't even have our credit scoring system. When something goes wrong, it is a tremendous pain point to find a lawyer to solve that problem. You know, most lawyers, and it's just the way lawyers get paid, most lawyers want to do things by the hour. You know, they want to charge you money upfront, which is very fair. But if you're dealing with, you know, a $2,000, $2,500 invoice, right, you know, to pay a lawyer $500 to do some work on it with no guarantee that there's going to be a recovery doesn't make a lot of sense. So then there's a group of lawyers who do this work on contingency. And they're people who will do a lawsuit, and they will only collect if you, you know, they will only get paid if you collect, contingent on collection. Those guys are great, and ladies too. The problem is that they won't work generally with individual freelancers because you're not a constant source of accounts for them. You're a one-off. So the folks that they want to work with are hospitals and credit card companies and you know, anybody else who has a lot of accounts, right? So that's what they go after. So the issue is, how do you make it attractive for them to work for freelancers? And the answer is aggregating the debts together, having one constant source of freelancer debts that they can use and really be excited about those accounts. And then they will put their resources to bear on these freelancer accounts, where they won't do it if they're just sort of a trickle people, you know, every once in a while. So they don't have a market for it. I mean, those, you know, you can Google, you know, collect a debt, and you can call them and they'll review it and they'll probably say they're not interested. But when I call them as Indie Payments and I say, you know, I've got, you know, two debts a week that I can give you in Southern California, let's say, from freelancers who are looking to get paid, you know, they'll perk up and say, you know, yeah, let's do business, and let's do business on desirable terms. I'm going to take less contingency from you. I'm not going to require my costs to be paid up front, because remember, when a lawyer brings a case, there are out-of-pocket expenses that have to be paid for. That's in addition to the lawyer's time. So the lawyer has his time, but he actually has to dig into his pocket to pay for filing fees. And those could get substantial. If you have a volume of cases you're bringing in, they'll usually advance those fees for you. It's not called advance the fees. They'll pay the fees for you, and then their money is at risk too, and they'll get paid back their costs from the recovery. And that's a really good arrangement, and that's what you get by working with a company like Indie Payment.
That makes sense. Yeah. That makes total sense.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, last question before we wrap up was going to be focused on, does it make sense to sell for pennies on the dollar our debts to actual debt collection firms? Is that something that's doable as a freelancer?
Sure. It isn't. So there is, that's the short answer. There are people who buy debts from you. They would buy your invoice most likely for pennies on the dollar, right? So if you have a $1,000 invoice, you might get $40 for it. And that's not, all the folks that I've dealt with are not attracted to that option. They would almost rather hold on to the invoice and hope that
own it themselves and hope it comes.
Yeah, and hope right. hope it gets paid. So that's called debt buying. That's a different business. Debt collectors are generally not in the debt buying business. The debt buyers of the world are the debt collectors' customers. A debt collector is generally not working for the original creditor, but rather somebody who purchased that debt from someone else for cents on the dollar. That's the way the debt collection industry works. We are at Indie Payment. We are experimenting with putting together portfolios of debt. And the reason why you want to have a portfolio instead of an individual debt is a lot of this stuff, unfortunately, for one reason or another, is not collectible. And so people want to buy a whole bunch of them. That they'll spend $25,000 to buy a couple hundred debts, right? Rather than spend that, the same amount to buy one debt, because of those couple hundred, some will be collectible. And if one of them is over $25,000, they'll make their money back. And that's the business. So nobody is going to want to buy your individual debt from you. And if they do, it's going to be very, very little money. But you collectively, yes, you can put a portfolio together. Nobody does that in the world right now. And because there's no central place where all those debts are registered, that's what Indie Payment is.
I mean, what's keeping somebody from like a FreshBooks or a Harvest from partnering with you and being able to automate a lot of this, pipe a lot of it over to something central? I mean, they should be able to quickly see across all of our accounts.
I would love that. One of the things is our development is a little bit immature at the moment, so we don't have the developers at Indie Payment right just yet, but we will to get that done with them, because that's not their business, it's our business. The second problem is one of they're not focused on this. They're selling a product that makes it appear that you work with them, they get you paid, right? So that's the idea. They don't want to think about the next step.
I believe FreshBooks has a thing where they'll look at your receivables and they'll basically pull like a mint.com and say, hey, did you're bringing in a lot of money, we click over here, and then I'm sure they get some big affiliate commission from that. But
sure, it's a fun box or something like that. Yeah, like that's all. I mean, that's factoring. There are a lot of people out there who will lend against receivables.
Oh no, this isn't. Right. I mean, this isn't factoring in the. This is more. I think more like that again. That cabbage or on deck model, where it's you're not factoring specifically against invoices, but instead you're looking at general income cash flow for the business, and you're lending an amount off of that.
Right. So Stripe is actually getting into that, right? And that's one of the
basically payday loans for businesses.
Payday loans for businesses. Yeah. And that's actually where the financial technology has a huge advantage over traditional banking, because a company like Stripe has really good information about who's getting paid and how much. But that's that's a different thing. When you take a loan like that, you need to pay it back, for lack of a better word. If you're not getting paid on your invoices, right? It's not really Stripe's problem. They probably won't loan you as much money, because they'll see that, you're putting out a lot of invoices that aren't actually collecting, and their computer will hopefully flag that, or else they're going to be out of business pretty soon. There's still the problem of getting your invoices paid. And if somebody's not paying you and you've got a loan out from Stripe, they're charging interest on it, you need to get those paid. And that's where that debt collection infrastructure comes in. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of your other question, what's stopping the invoicing companies of the world from working with us? And nothing. And we hope that they do. And I think that once we get this system going, it's going to really change the way freelancers and independent workers and small businesses are able to evaluate risk and are able to quickly tap into that debt collection infrastructure, the attorneys and the debt collectors of the world that everybody else, every other creditor has. And that's what we need. And once you get that going, your non-payment issue is just going to become the same, you know, the same risk that, that anyone else has, as opposed to the freelancers now have a huge non-payment risk. You know, it'll just be the same as any other creditor, and that would be awesome.
Oh, ton of luck. I mean, there's so I think, and I've said this before, I think a lot of the problem is that most of us are transitioning from full-time salaried work, where we usually think that if we're showing up at an office for 40 hours a week, every 2 weeks we're going to get paid. There's going to be a direct deposit hitting our account. But we're running a business, right? We're running a, I mean, you mentioned credit card companies at the beginning. I forgot on accident to pay my Amex charge card bill a few months back. And oh my God, did they hound me like immediately,
sure,
right?
Sure.
And I mean, that's the kind of thing where
That's
the difference, right?
Like, right. Yeah. I mean, they have it there, and you know, and it's an interesting thing with that. It's something we talked about earlier. You know, Amex has revenues of billions and billions of dollars a year, probably even profits, not even revenues. You know, they can probably let your $10,000, you know, $5,000 bill slide,
right.
But they don't want
that. Right, exactly.
You know, but freelancers, on the other hand,
we can't afford to lose.
Some freelancers have basically 12 clients a year, right? And if one of them isn't paying, you know, you've just decreased your revenue by 8% the whole year. So it's sort of, we need freelancers are the ones who need this infrastructure.
And a lot of us don't like confrontation. We're not comfortable, or we're hardly comfortable enough selling let alone debt collecting.
I mean, sure. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the pain point. I mean, and finding somebody who wants to do that, is difficult for freelancers, but they should know that there are a lot of people out there who make their living doing that. They probably sleep well at night. This is, you know, their skill set. They can't do anything creative, so they do things aggressive.
Exactly.
And that's fine. And they're most, I've worked with debt collectors and attorneys all the time, and they're generally good people, except when you're across the table from them. So it's, you know, and those are the folks you need. And having a way to find them efficiently is what indie payment's all about.
I love what you're doing. I mean, it sounds incredible. I hope you can partner with some of the big SaaS invoicing tools, because it sounds like you don't even need to think, right? Like you're just kind of like a back-end underwriter practically, where you're not even like publicly visible in a lot of ways, at least until they need you. But anyway, Jesse, just want to thank you again for coming on the show. Best place, I guess, to find you is indiepayment.com.
One word. That's the company. But until we do those partnerships with the invoicing companies, you can come and, you know, do it the old fashioned way and register your invoices and your debt with us. And we'll take care of it. And that's the service we're offering. And we're really excited to be one of the first, I think the only one in the space right now. And just generally too, if people want to write me, and I'll give you my email address, it's Jesse, J-E-S-S-E, at IndiePayment, IndiePayment.com. With just general questions about collecting invoices or legal problems they might have with respect to collections, maybe if it's something a little more advanced, you know, I'll might take a little bit to get back to you, but I'll take a look at it, and I'm just always interested to hear that the legal issues and that freelancers and independent workers and small businesses are having, for my own knowledge, and also because maybe I can help, and it really helps us develop this tool that we think is really going to change things. So please write me anytime.
That's great. And one little message for you, Jesse, is I don't know if you've seen it, but there's a service called Zapier.
Yes, sure.
Yeah, which I'm sure if you just build an integration with them, and you could automatically say, like, because Harvest, FreshBooks, they all integrate with Zapier.
Sure. Well, so we have, yeah, that's cool. I definitely need to do that. I actually use Zapier for other purposes.
Okay.
So
yeah.
I already pay them $10 a month, and if I can get more use out of my $10, that would be great.
Well, it wouldn't be for you. It would be for listeners who use something like Harvest or one of these tools.
I can make a zap
between Harvest and IndiePayment. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That would be really neat. So just sort of tell the users how to do that.
Then you don't need to wait for Harvest to officially sanction, you know, what
that
you're up
would
to.
Be, that, so. That's amazing. Not only did I talk about IndiePayment here, but I actually got a fantastic tip about how to speed things along. And that's really great. And I hope I was also helpful with
you were. Well, Jesse, thanks again.
Cool. Great. You have a good one.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Jesse. Again, I would love a review on iTunes if you haven't left one yet.
just head on over to doubleyourfreelancing.com/podcast. And I have the links all there for reviewing. One other thing I want to mention, too, is if you have or have been planning on emailing me, I actually changed my email address to brennan@doubleyourfreelancing.com. Now I've really got everything consolidated under the doubleyourfreelancing.com brand. So if you do ever want to reach out and contact me about, you know, whether it's about potential guests or thoughts about the podcast or whatever else, please use that email address from here on out. All right. Thanks again.